You are about to enter a world beyond your five senses. A world where doubt and certainty walk hand in hand. A world where strangeness is king and mystery is his bastard child. You are about to enter Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world. My body, your body, everybody look at your body. I'm Lionel Nimrod. It was the words of my favorite pop musician, Jonathan King, which in 1984 led me, in an attempt to escape the well-documented problems of my personal life, to the Spanish mountains to find the wizened old Spanish guru, the Conqui. The Conqui told me that the body was a holy cathedral which mortal men are not worthy to use. I agreed to join him, to sit naked in his cave for the rest of my life, doing nothing. How foolish I was, and how cold. Tonight, we will find out the real secrets of that wondrous mystery, the human body. Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world of the human body. Your professors of the paranormal.
I'm Stuart Lee,
and I answer to the name of Richard Herring.
Hello once more, and welcome to another Inexplicable World, coming to you this week from the Contact Theatre at Manchester University. This week we're looking at the human body. Human bodies are like Quality Street chocolates. They come in all shapes, sizes and colours, and everyone is someone's favourite. Although, unfortunately, I always seem to be left with the small, green, unpleasant-tasting ones. If you were to take out all human intestines and blood capillaries in someone's body and lay them end-to-end, it wouldn't be long before you were sent to a high-security hospital for the criminally insane, as Jeffrey Dahmer, the Milwaukee cannibal, knows only too well. Bodybuilders think it's good to train their bodies so that they can lift an iron bar with large weights on either end above their heads for up to 8 seconds. And this skill comes in very useful in real life if you're ever in a situation which requires an iron bar with large weights on either end to be lifted above your head for up to 8 seconds.
Fat people try to change the shape of their bodies. The most popular diet in the world is the Cambridge diet, which involves cycling around in a blue scarf and being rude and patronising to decent, ordinary local people. You don't actually lose weight, but it does entitle you to a part in any film by Kenneth Branagh. We've come to Manchester University to do a show about the body because it has the largest student body in the country, which belongs to Andrew Hopkins, a third-year chemistry student. But to start us on our quest to discover why we have a body and what it's for, let's see what some of the famous people throughout history have said about it.
Elizabeth I, 1599.
I know I have the body of a weak and feeble woman, but I have the heart and the stomach of a king. I keep the body of the woman in a rocking chair in the attic, and the heart and stomach of the king are in the fridge. Look.
Oscar Wilde, 1901.
You can imprison my body, Lord Arthur, but you cannot imprison my mind, because my mind is already in Brixton Prison for a minor parking offence.
Salman Rushdie, 1990.
Look, I am not at odds with the Muslim faith. They believe that the human body should be concealed from sight at all times, and so do I, these days.
Samantha Fox, 1989.
My body is the cabin of my consciousness and the sailboat of my soul and the house of my intellect. And if I can get $5,000 a day for just flashing mine around a bit, well, that's the icing on the cake, really, isn't it?
Now, back in the 60s, altering bodily perceptions with LSD was considered a legitimate way to research how the senses work. Back then, most acid was made in California from the purest LSD. It had names like Blue Sunshine and LA Sky and made everyone feel happy, uplifted and wise.
Today, most of the world's acid is made here in Manchester. From the purest flour, brick dust and scouring powder. It has names like Hume Drizzle, Salford Surprise and Bathroom Cleaner. And it makes anyone who takes it feel like they're about to be sick and die. And that's called progress.
To help us discover the truth about our senses, we tried to contact some of the scientific luminaries who used the harmless and wonderful LSD drug in the past. But they all seem to have gone mad or died.
So instead, under this thick, soundproof deprivation blanket, we've got the 1960s TV journalist, Mr. Christopher Mayhew. Christopher, hello. Now, back in the 60s, you chemically altered your perceptions live on British TV using LSD. So you're going to do that here tonight?
Unfortunately, the BBC will no longer allow its staff to take dangerous hallucinogenic drugs live on air. But all is not lost. Underneath this sheet, I've got 400 high-tar cigarettes, 100 Pro Plus caffeine tablets, 10 bars of Fool Dairy Milk chocolate, a big plastic bottle of Woodpecker cider, a few packs of Lucozade glucose tablets, and a whole jar of Vicks Vapor Rub. So I reckon my senses should be plenty chemically altered enough by the end of the show, thank you very much.
Right, Mr. Mayhew, let's tuck you in and we'll be back to see how you've got on later.
Fine.
Now, another 60s radical, Anita Roddick, has made the body into her fortune by setting up her successful chain, The Body Shop. I went to meet her.
If I said you had
when Anita Roddick opened this, the first body shop in Chelsea in 1978, she could never have dreamed that today there'd be almost 11 branches all over southwest London. But there are.
Stewie, hi, come in. Body shop started really when I realised just how much waste the average person produces in a year. Now that waste can be put to good use and make money.
But the waste you're talking about here, Anita, let's get it straight, is human bodily waste, yeah?
That's right, yeah. Every person in this country produces a staggering 15 tonnes every year of toenail, sweat, old skin, hair, plaque and other waste. Waste which they quite literally flush down the toilet. Now I saw that waste and I thought, hey, where there's muck, there's brass.
Alfonso Bonucci works in the Chelsea store and he showed me the company's range of cosmetics.
Yes, this facial scrub is very good, entirely natural, made from rough underfoot skin, held together with earwax and peppered with sleep collected from my eye. We've got phlegm shampoos, scented with urine, which is very good for your scalp, Stuart. This loofah is made entirely from fingernail clippings. And this face oil is made from oil collected from the face of a teenage boy. We call it face oil, face oil. It's very popular.
This year, we're branching out into foodstuffs. And today is the opening of our cafe, Café de Body.
This hair is delicious, Anita.
And remember, everything you see here is made from bodily ingredients.
The cottage cheese stuff is interesting. How did you make that?
My husband Malcolm was responsible for that. Don't worry, it is vegan. Hair burritos, anyone?
Anita is now planning to expand her business concerns and projects by collecting spit to irrigate East Anglia. But what we want to find out today is exactly how everything in the body works.
Will you please welcome Britain's oldest living person from Canterbury, the 147-year-old Mrs. Monica Cackley.
Mrs. Cackley, hello. Mrs. Cackley, what sort of advice do you have for any listeners who might want to try and become as old as you have?
Well, people who want to live to be very old should try and stay alive. Remember to breathe. And this is my very special tip, have a stale bourbon biscuit every day before they go to bed. I'm 147, you know. But to be quite honest, it isn't worth it. I've got horrible blue veins all up my legs. My bottom doesn't work. And my only pleasure is to go down to the town centre, walk very slowly and get in young people's way.
But is there any practical use for the elderly? In America, the NASA space program has been trying for years to find a material for the heat shields of the space shuttle, able to withstand the incredibly high temperatures of re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere. And now, they've succeeded.
Okay, the shuttle's ready to make re-entry. The British old age pensioners are all strapped to the outside. Let's see how they're holding up.
Ooh, it's a bit parky out here, isn't it?
Yes. Are you
Yes, but do put on another cardigan if you're cold, won't you?
Geneticists have shown that it's possible to clone exact replicas of ourselves from a single body cell. But genetic engineering is an ethical minefield. Apparently, a world where everyone had been engineered to be talented, intelligent, fit, and beautiful would be morally wrong, and not really great, as you might imagine.
In the mid-1980s, Robert Smith of The Cure cloned literally millions of copies of himself. And it was impossible to pass any street corner without seeing one of the shaggy-haired, lipstick-smeared Smith replicants. However, after a few months, even the brainless zombie clones realised how stupid they looked and went and bought themselves a decent pair of trousers in Topshop.
In 1992, genetic scientist Greg Evigan of De Montfort University expanded on Smith's work to attempt to create the perfect society where everyone was exactly equal by filling the Welsh village of Port Merion with 50 perfect replicas of himself. This is his story.
Day one, success. The cell I took from my inner thigh has given me 50 exact clones of me, all perfectly 5'3" and completely bald. Oh, brave new world that has such people in it. Day two. The first meeting of the Greg Evigan people ended in disarray, as this recording shows. Hello. Welcome. I am Professor Greg Evigan, and you are all my clones.
No, I'm Professor Greg Evigan. You're my clone.
Oh, I am he.
Be quiet. Now, it's time for me to give you your appointed duties for the smooth running of the Greg Evigan world. Greg Evigan 1, you are the road sweeper and latrine cleaner of our society.
Latrine cleaner? Do you know who I am? I am Professor Greg Evigan, Professor of Genetics of De Montfort University. I'm not cleaning the latrines. I have important Professor of Genetics genetic work to carry out.
No, I am here. If you excuse me, I've got my important Professor of Genetics genetic work to carry out as well.
No, I am here.
Day 15. 2 weeks have passed, and my dreams of a perfect society have crumbled to dust. Each of my Greg Evigans has insisted that he is the original Greg Evigan and has cloned himself a further 50 times. And those clones, in turn, have cloned themselves. They're breeding like rabbits and doing their important genetic work all over the Welsh countryside. I have had no option but to ask the RAF to bomb the whole of Port Merion to pieces. It's the only...
Oh, you're there! Greg Evigan clone, what are you doing with my tape recorder? I need to use that for my important Professor of Genetics genetic work.
But I am the real Greg Evigan, aren't I?
No, I am!
No, I am he!
Ah! Oh, help me!
One of the most enduring mysteries of the human body is the mystery of sexual difference. In order for us to compare the mysterious variation in the body of a man and of a woman, I've invited along the naked man and the naked woman from page 14 of my school Nuffield Foundation biology course textbook. So, will you please welcome the naked man and the naked woman?
Hello, I am the naked man, and I am naked.
And I am the naked woman, and I am naked also.
You may not have seen a naked man and a naked woman before, but don't be scared.
And remember, there is nothing funny or rude about the naked human body.
So, let's take a look, without shame or embarrassment, at some of the things that make a naked man...
and a naked woman...
different. The first difference you'll spot is our hair. My hair is short and neat, as a man's must always be. So that you could still recognize me as a man if for any reason I were to dress up in woman's clothes. Which I would never do anyway. And it's brown.
A woman's hair, like mine, must be long and blonde and styled like that of Cheryl Ladd from Charlie's Angels.
The next difference is in our arms. My arms are muscly and covered in hair. I could use them to lift a large weight above my head for up to 8 seconds. Or punch a man who has been looking at my naked woman in a funny way.
A naked woman's arms are longer than the naked man's and can be used for picking flowers and holding several babies at once. The next difference between a naked man and a naked woman is lower down. Hips. A naked woman's hips are wide, so that she can spend the whole of her life from the age of 18 worrying that her bum is too big.
Well, my naked man's hips are narrow, so that I can ride a 10-speed racing bicycle, dance the fandango, wear hipster slacks, and hide in narrow cracks and walls while out foraging for food for my naked wife and naked children.
And the last difference between us is here, in the upper torso area, where, as a sort of joke, Gary Partridge of 3B2 has written tits across my chest in biro.
Thank you, the naked man and the naked woman there. Nice to see you both still naked after all these years.
But do the physical variations between men and women lead to differences in character that mean we'll never really be able to get on?
Computer dating agencies have been set up in a futile attempt to overcome these insurmountable differences by putting people in touch with their supposedly ideal partner. Earlier this week, I went along to Computo Dato Olinko Date in Hanwell to see for myself. We'll always be together.
Mr. Herring, now let me just check your details. Okay, you've listed your interests as football, fruit machines, video games, Monty Python sketches, drinking beer, and women's wrestling.
That's correct, yes. Those are all of my interests.
Okay, well, we fed that data into the computer, and I'm pleased to be able to say that your ideal partner is waiting for you now behind this sliding door.
Oh, good.
Here's your perfect partner, Richard, Alan Stevens.
Hello.
Hello. But Alan is a man.
Yes. The thing is, Mr. Herring, there aren't any women who have similar interests to you. I've been in the computer dating business for 11 years now, and I think it's best just to put people of the same sex together. They have more in common. And Alan Stevens here does like all the same things as you.
I sure do.
No offence, Alan. It's I was just hoping for a woman.
Well, so was I.
There's another thing you have in common.
Rich, do you want to go to Soho and play in the amusement arcades tonight?
Well,
there's nothing funny about it.
All right. Wow, this Terminator 2 pinball machine is great.
Yes, it's my favourite too. I particularly like the payback time feature.
Yeah, me too, and the video mode. Great. This is ace. I could never bring a girl here. Hey, Alan, this parrot I got here is dead.
They eat you and eat the legs. Brilliant. Yeah. That's the best sketch ever. Do you want a load more beer?
Yeah. You're great, Alan. Well, that was a terrific night out, Alan. Thanks very much.
Yeah, it was good when I won 20p on the quiz machine, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's the best time I've had in ages.
Mmm.
Well, I'd like to shake you by the hand and bid you goodbye.
Do you want to come in for a coffee?
All right.
So, Rich, the date's over. What happened next?
That is between me and Alan, Stuart. Suffice to say that I'm now seeing him regularly.
Oh, yeah?
But there's nothing funny about it, Stuart. If all men live with men and all women live with women, I think we'd have a much better society.
All right, only if I can watch.
Now, sadly, many of the world's bodies are less than perfect. If you've seen the film Mask, you'll be aware of one of the saddest disabilities that can afflict mankind. I don't know if you've seen it. Cher stars as the mother of a child with a terrible physical handicap. He's got curly ginger hair. But it's worse than that. He's got a centre parting as well. It's tragic.
But in enlightened 90s Britain, no one dare mock the ginger-haired anymore. Only the lowest person would dare refer to them as ginger nuts, carrot tops, Duracells or ginger minges. Nowadays, it's politically correct to refer to them as persons with unpleasant orange-coloured hair.
Ironically, the saddest freaks are often the biggest superheroes. In the story of Spider-Man, Peter Parker gets the abilities of a spider when a spider accidentally finds its way into his atomic experiment. He's thus able to catch thieves, spin webs, and fly on a thread, but finds it impossible to get out of the bath in the morning.
Now, most superheroes are fiction, but one of them is real. A film of his life is to be released later in the year. And here is the trailer.
Johnny Merrick was just an ordinary lab worker at the Sellafield nuclear processing plant. Until one day, during a delicate experiment, an uninvited guest somehow found its way into the radioactive chamber.
I'll just put in the Pyridium 578. How did that elephant get in here?
And so, Johnny Merrick became the Elephant Man.
Oh no! Hundreds of sticky buns have spilled out of that lorry and are heading for the primary school!
Sounds like a job for the Elephant Man.
Look, a cloaked figure with a bag over his head has arrived and is eating them all.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure, ma'am.
The nuclear missile firing site is on fire.
Who's that squirting water out of his trunk and dousing the flames?
It's some kind of monster.
I am not a monster. I am a human being.
Well, stop rolling about in the mud, then.
Look, my kitchen bin is overflowing with litter. Oh, Elephant Man, you've sawed off your foot to make a makeshift elephant's foot waste paper basket for my excess garbage. Thanks.
All in a day's work for the Elephant Man.
The Elephant Man. You'll believe an elephant can fly.
Doctors are the wizards of modern society, using their potions to effect miraculous changes upon ailing patients. Let's take a look at medicine through the ages.
Cavemen believed headaches were caused by demons who they would release by knocking a hole in the top of the head. This technique is still used today for other parts of the body. If my experience with the laser at the St. George's Hospital Tooting Genital Urinary Infections Clinic is anything to go by.
Elizabethan doctors believed our bodies were composed entirely from the four humours: water, blood, bile and phlegm. They found this out by consuming huge amounts of curried venison and gallons of mead and then analysing what came out of their bodies at both ends. Chinese acupuncturists are able to cure practically every human malady simply by sticking a series of pins and needles into their bodies. Ironically, as yet, they've been unable to come up with a remedy for pins and needles.
New Age medicine suggests that the body should be treated as a whole. Personally, I think that all bodies should be treated as a series of holes, with each hole deserving of its own special attention.
But for many others, the tantalizing sensation of resisting temptation is the greatest and holiest pleasure our bodies can provide.
Yeah, the mad Russian monk Rasputin belonged to a sect of holy men called the Starets, who actively sought out pleasure so they could then refuse it and thus get closer to God. As Alex de Jong's book, The Life and Times of Grigori Rasputin, Fontana 1982, reveals.
Throughout his life, Rasputin fought a losing battle against bodily temptations. He was expelled from the Starets Monastery when, after 4 days of trial, he was finally unable to resist the Mr. Kipling's chocolate French fancy, which the head monk had been dangling in front of his face on a string. He made his way to St. Petersburg and became the darling of the Russian aristocracy, and particularly the aristocrats' wives.
Moina Golovina, we must lie here together naked all night to prove we can resist the evil, devilish urges of the flesh.
Whatever you say, Rasputin.
Please, my friends call me Ra-Ra. Ra-Ra, Rasputin.
You know, the whole of the court is talking about you, saying you're the lover of the Russian queen, Russia's greatest sex machine. The cat who really is gone. It's a shame how you carry on. And furthermore, you are a brown girl in the ring.
That is all true. I am the lover of the Russian queen. And remember, now, in 1916, it isn't as easy to shag a member of a royal family as it will be in the future.
You're so good to resist my heaving, yearning bosoms.
Oh, come on then. Well, we must try to resist again tomorrow, hey?
All right.
Okay.
Now, you remember at the start of the show, we left 1960s TV journalist Christopher Mayhew under a sheet, stuffing himself with psychoactive stimulants. Let's see if he's ready to come out from under it and face the world with a new set of senses. Christopher Mayhew, are you there?
Yes, and the stimulant cocktails have taken effect now. I'm chemically altered and raring to go.
Okay, let the experience begin.
I'm lifting off the blanket now.
Oh, my giddy aunt, what are to do? I seem to be literally able to kick down the doors of perception and use my senses to see everything as it really is.
And what can you see now, Mr. Mayhew?
My stars! None of what our pathetic five earthly senses perceive is real at all. The whole of the world is just a screen in a huge provincial cinema. And what we know as reality is just a film projected onto it. I hope there's an interval soon. I'm bursting for the toilet after all that cider. But hang on. A small, bald, Hammond organist wearing a spangly jacket is rising up from the cinema orchestra pit.
Yes, that must be our weekly Hammond organ playing guest, Peter Fenn. Yeah. He's getting a bit too darn popular for my liking. This means it's time for Peter Fenn's weekly Hammond organ Believe It or Not spot.
Thanks, Richard. Believe it or not, 19th century Italian revolutionaries lived by Manzoni's creed. You are what you eat. And the leader Garibaldi ate only Garibaldi biscuits. That was consequently wafer thin and covered in black raisins. However, he and his men were able to use their biscuit-like abilities to unify Italy by hiding in a cake tin in Victor Emmanuel III's pantry and launching a surprise attack at tea time.
Thanks, Peter. And this week's Hammond organ tune was?
It was Can't Take My Eyes Off of You, Richard.
By?
That's a joint effort by Crewe and Gaudio. And I, for one, can't take my eyes or ears off of Crewe or Gaudio. You're a smashing couple of Hammond organ ears.
Peter, by the way, do you realise that the fact that only you can be seen by both us and Christopher Mayhew means that you and your Hammond organ are the only definitely real things in existence?
Well, that's as may be, Richard, but one thing's for sure. My Hammond organ provides a very real world of listening pleasure for the millions of my elderly and sick fans. My Radio 2 show, It's Fenn Again, which goes out at 1:35 a.m. on Tuesdays, provides a touchstone of reality for the bedbound and the sleepless folk all across our British land. Catch it if you can.
Thanks, Peter. So, Christopher Mayhew, you're in a bleak world where only Peter Fenn is real.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm going for a lie down.
Well, that's all sorted out then. That's all for this week. Goodbye.
So the hidden secrets of our bodies are revealed. After 2 years sitting still in that cave, practicing the Kunkian faith, I looked at my feeble, wrinkled, flabby body, a body that in younger days, in Tarzan and the Jungle Curse, swung gracefully through the trees in an ape suit. I put on my cardigan and left, for I had discovered that the body is not holy, my friends. It's disgusting and should remain covered at all times. Join me, Lionel Nimrod, again next time for more journeys into this, my inexplicable world.